Lindsay, do the intro. Lindsay, you're muted. Do the intro. Lindsay, do the intro. Go ahead.
That's the intro.
That's the intro. Live!
That's it now.
From a blurry, live from the witness relocation program. I'm trying to move my fucking chair back like an inch, and it's stuck on something. All right, motherfuckers. This is Podzilla After Network on the Dark Channel.
It looks like you're coming to me straight from a virtual boy.
I am.
Like, what?
I am. I have been as part of
black
my...
and red 3D.
This is how they satiate my this is how they fix my fear of death, is they've installed me. Billy has installed me onto a virtual boy. I don't know how he did it. I don't know how he did it, but here we are.
Do we know how Billy does anything, honestly?
I don't think we do. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Unimportant, and with me tonight we have Lindsay Wolfgang, who still can't be heard.
Why? Why can't you hear me? Is my mic dying now also?
I can hear you.
Oh, we heard it now.
I can hear you. And Double H.
Hey there, Peter. What's happening?
Noticeably absent from tonight's show, Jesse and Shelby. Personal reasons. I can't say much more than that, other than...
We have a lot of cast involved in a lot of various personal reasons, which is why it's just the three of us.
Which is insane. Yeah, Jesse had a death in the family. Tanner had a baby. I don't know what Kaz is doing.
We said it. One goes out, one comes in.
Kaz works for a major company, so that's probably why he's not here. We can't say what, though. Have we ever said what Kaz does on the air?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
We probably
should. I know he would not want that.
No.
That is not a thing he would want.
No. This is the Thursday show. It's very, man, it's very empty tonight. It's a strange feeling, just the three of us. Like, here is your preview for next week's episode of Extras and Epilogues.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be me and Lindsay and Hunter.
We did a very cool episode last night with Cody about Office Space, and we decided at the end of the episode next week we're covering 10 Things I Hate About You, and immediately we went, well, we know who's going to be on.
Yeah.
I better be.
Yeah, Hunter asked me, he was like, you know, you gave me the choice last week. Your choice this week, what are we covering? As much as I wanted to do the Blair Witch Project, I agreed with Hunter. And it's like, let's give Tanner a week off and let's bring Lindsay in to talk about 10 Things I Hate About You. Not a movie that I was ever... I never loved that movie, for the record. I like it, but I never loved it. I had the biggest crush on the girl in that movie. Not Julia Stiles. Because
I was going to say, there are a couple. So you're talking about Larissa Olenek then?
Yep, that's the
one.
That's
her name.
Yep.
My brain just goes to the girl from Alex Mack.
Yep.
Yep. Alex Mack.
Adorable.
She was also on Boy Meets World. She was one of Sean Hunter's girlfriends. And actually a recurring role, because she's in like one random episode at that time when that show was he and Corey and Eric. I couldn't think of the older brother. No.
Oh, shit,
when the boys have like new girlfriends every week, but then like three of Sean's girlfriends come back in a later episode to like hold trial on him for him being basically a womanizer. And she's one of them, because as I've listened to their podcast, Bond Meets World, Ryder Strong, who played Sean, has mentioned like he and Larissa were actually really good friends. And so when it came time to figure out who to bring back, he's like, you have to bring her back. She's one of the key ones.
Man, I feel like that's going to happen to me at some point. Like all the knowing what I know about the women the women that I've dated in the past few years, feel like there's going to be a giant trial, and I'm going to be found guilty. For the record,
well, on the show, it took place in a boathouse inexplicably. So
we're not doing
just
that.
Stay away from boathouses.
No, I'm sure it'll be on Discord. That's what we ought to do.
Ready.
That's all right. So there you go. For
the trial of Shannon Young.
For our ninth anniversary, the trial of Shannon Young. I'm gathering up all the ex girlfriends. Just one.
Well, you have until next March to get your shit together.
I got until next March to start making amends with people and building some of those bridges back. And we'll have the trial of Shannon Young live on the show, and the audience gets to decide what happens to me. You get to decide. I'll give a rose to the girl, the ex girlfriend that gets to kill me, and it's decided by the audience.
bold of you to assume the one who's here won't get to do that before any of this shit happens.
My money's on Lindsay. I think Lindsay will be the one to put me out of my misery. No, that's not true. She hasn't yet.
I haven't killed you yet.
Exactly. She hasn't killed me
yet. Yet, though, is the operative word.
Hey, look, I took her to see Barbie today. All right?
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard it was good.
It was good. Yeah. It was really good.
I want to see it tomorrow.
Going into it, fuck, we should have done Barbie next week instead of 10 Things I Hate About You.
And just covered it. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, but now I want to talk about Barbie. I really liked it.
Talk about it now.
Yeah, but,
I mean, don't spoil it. Talk about it.
Man, I'll tell you what. This isn't really a spoiler because I know you said you kind of read about it. But, like, going into this movie, I fully expected it to be this weird and wacky thing. And it was. A lot of it was weird and wacky. It was very, very imaginative, very creative. I love the visuals. Ryan Gosling is so amazing as Ken. I liked him as Ken more than I liked Margot Robbie as Barbie. And she was fantastic as Barbie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But holy smokes, once you get about 3/4 into the movie, the whole final like 30 minutes is just a gut punch. It surprised me how much it like touched me. I don't want to spoil it. You know, once you see it, we'll talk more about it. But that the last 30, especially the very final part, I was literally choking back tears at the final part. And even once I got out of the film and I went to the bathroom and I'm washing my hands,
he
I started
still
tearing
had
up
tears
again.
In his eyes when we went to the parking lot.
Yeah, we went to Target. I had to put sunglasses on because I still had tears in my eyes. I'm like, I don't do well when it comes to like humanity and love and life and death and stuff like that. I told Jesse this the other day that I am incredibly emotionally unstable nowadays, and it gets worse every day. And Jesse, of course, you know, being one of my best friends, replied, I don't know how to respond to that. So then he started talking about his truck more, which is, I guess, man, I guess.
For what it's worth, I don't think that that's emotional instability or anything like that. I think that's just a maturing process, because I'm the same way. There are things now that I would never have expected to get emotional about, especially in films, that when they hit, I just know, all right, here we go. This is happening.
Yeah. That's why I love horror.
And I just deal with it.
That's why I love horror movies. Everyone's always like, you know, why do you? I almost exclusively watch horror films, and people go like, why do you just watch horror movies? Why don't you watch other stuff? I like other movies, but what I like about horror is, unless it's a really good character-driven horror film, I don't get as emotionally invested in the people. I go for the monsters. I go for the gore. I go for the kills. It's a fun time. I can watch a horror movie, shut my brain off, be a little bit scared, and I never feel bad. And then you go into a movie like Barbie. You don't expect to feel bad. You don't expect to get emotional over Barbie. And then here it is. This is actually one of the wildest box offices I can ever recall in my life, because you've got two movies that released on the same day that has, like, people are already talking about this being one of the biggest, you know, weeks for movies in history, with Barbie and Oppenheimer.
At the very least, for a while, it's Oppenheimer.
Okay, I thought so.
At the very least, since COVID, I mean, I have to imagine this is one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest. Did you know that Oppenheimer has a 15-minute sex scene in it?
I did, because I read...
Oppenheimer, because every time you guys keep saying it, my brain just goes to Alan Oppenheimer, and I just hear Skeletor laughing in my head.
That's what it is.
Robert,
it's the same guy.
No, Robert Oppenheimer, the guy who created the atomic bomb.
Yeah, okay.
Cillian Murphy plays him. It's got Florence Pugh, Robert Downey Jr.'s in it.
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt. That's who I knew. I was forgetting a principal one. I mean, I'm hearing nothing but good stuff about it in terms of it being a great, you know, it's a Christopher Nolan movie, so it's well plotted, it's well shot. Robert Downey Jr. apparently puts in literally the performance of his lifetime. People were saying, like, don't get me wrong, he was great as Iron Man, but if you're looking for him to really put on an acting clinic, this is it. But a 15-minute sex scene. So Christopher Nolan has not done an R-rated movie in 21 years. I think Memento, maybe, was the last one that he did that was R-rated. First R-rated movie in 21 years and a 15-minute sex scene. And that was the thing that I came back from getting food and my wife goes, I don't think we're going to be seeing Oppenheimer in the theater.
Be a little awkward.
And I was like, and why not?
Yeah.
And then she hit me with that.
Yeah, I read it. That's a lot. It's pretty intense too, from what I understand. Like, this isn't one of those, I don't think it's a sexy sex scene. I don't know how you would put a sexy sex scene in a movie about the atomic bomb.
Well, and also, I mean, I get it. They're actors, but the age difference between Cillian Murphy and Florence Pugh is fairly significant.
I'm looking this up. I have to know.
because it's like 20 years or so, I think.
Well, Cillian Murphy is it Cillian or Cillian?
Cillian.
Cillian is 47, and Florence Pugh is...
She is 27.
She is 27, so 20 years. Look, as someone that dated a girl who was 14 years younger than him, I feel like I've got a little bit of insight into that. Like, I saw someone post the other day something about... Actually, it may have been the same thing. They were talking about how what a problem it was that these two people... And the replies, you know, some people, yeah, were like, yeah, that's gross. That why would you do that, et cetera, et cetera. But then other people were like, well, I mean, she's 27. People acting like a 27-year-old can't be with whoever she wants to be is kind of ridiculous. And it's true. Well, once you're 21, who gives a fuck who you're dating? I don't care if you're 20 years old or 30 years older. That's your choice. If it's all perfectly legal, I mean, I don't.
It is a choice, and it is legal, and I don't, you know, I don't begrudge people doing what they want to do. And obviously, she signed up for the movie; she knew it was in it. there's something about, and I know this is different because they're actors, but there's something about the power dynamic.
Yeah,
in the difference between those ages, that's like a little.
Was it similar in Jurassic Park? With Sam, yes. Sam Neill and Laura Dern?
Sam Neill and Laura Dern were significantly different ages at that time. I want to say that was more than 20 years.
I'm pretty sure. Correctly. Yeah, hold on. I'm looking this up real quick because I want to know. So Neill was born in 47.
Laura Dern is...
No, it's 20.
She's currently 20 years. 56.
20 years.
20 years.
Yep.
There you go. Yeah.
The only difference...
So same type of deal.
When Jurassic Park came out, what, 94?
Three, I think.
So that would have... Right. She was 23. At the time.
Yeah.
And he was 43. Now, it's like, I get it.
It was June 11th, 93.
Yeah, I get it, man. That's a little awkward. I think
there's a reason I know that off the top of my head, by the way. We briefly talked about it recently.
Refresh me, you bastard.
Because it's, I don't know if I said it outright, but it is it's what I'm working on for the next episode of The Inquest.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I haven't done much work in the past couple of days, but I am working on it.
I do wish Jesse was here because there is, speaking of Oppenheimer, there is, you know, his famous quote about the bomb. They put it.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Yeah. Talking about the, Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
So they took that quote and they put it in a Linkin Park album, which I forget the name of. I want to say it's, which one was it? I'm gonna look up.
Well, there's Papercut was the song title. Meteora, Minutes to Midnight.
I think it's Minutes to Midnight. Was that the one?
I mean, that sounds right. That would make sense.
That was the weird one that everyone like. Jesse and I always joke that we're the only two people that liked it.
Nope. You're thinking of the
Thousand Suns. Thousand Suns.
Or Thousand Suns is the album. Radiance. The Radiance is the song.
Yeah, and they have that quote in there of I actually had it pulled up here. What was it? Because it's really haunting. It's now I've become death, the destroyer of worlds. And he says, what was it? I gotta find it. He said, we knew the world would not be the same. A few people laughed. A few people cried. Most people were silent. It's just, it's very dark. And it's a very dark story. I mean, this is the dude that, I mean, killed how many people? You know, what he did led to how many people dying? Innocent people at that. I maintained, like, I get why they dropped the nukes. I get it. But at the same time, it's a hard pill to swallow, even all these years later, that many innocent people died for their government, you know?
And as much as I want to see this in the theater, because I think Christopher Nolan movies being the visual spectacle that they are, and of course you're guaranteed a gigantic explosion or two, I don't think I could sit through a 15-minute sex scene in a public theater, man. That's just.
I don't think I get sit through a lot. I can't even sit through a 15 sex scene in real life. Like about 7 minutes in, I'm like, my God, who paid to watch this? You know,
who's still filming?
Who's still watching this?
It's weird. I think that's gonna make the difference for us there.
I've never liked sex scenes in films. Like I understand they serve their purpose, and sometimes they have an emotional punch to them. Like, you know, the one that pops into my head first, Monsters Ball with Halle Berry Billy Bob Thornton. That sex scene, even though it's explicit and it's kind of raunchy, it serves a purpose and it has a point. But, you know, growing up in the 80s and the early 90s and the mid 90s, I'm so used to seeing sex scenes thrown into movies just for the, you know, right. for the sex of it, just to
hey,
sex
we,
it
up. We grew up in the same era, not on, but in the same era as like American Pie, right? Like that was that the well-known yeah. thing for the longest time. Yeah, exactly.
And you know, as a horror fan, I dare you to watch it. I was talking about this with coworkers the other day at the office, and we were talking about 80s horror films. They were like, "It's just sex. It's just tits and ass." And I'm like, "That's yep. a significant portion of it is yes,
a lot of it, yes,
a lot of it." But you know, times were different. It was the 80s, you know.
Who makes 50s rock in the 80s, Shin?
I don't know. Billy Joel, Hunter? You ever heard of him?
And that segues right into our topic for the night.
Hey, Lindsay, what's our topic for the night?
We are doing music through the decades. Basically, we are to pick five songs, one from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh, boy.
Real quick before we get into it, I almost had a motherfucker of the week. And then I don't know that I do now. I told you this briefly yesterday. I was going to say this earlier, and I totally forgot. It looked like Hulu had removed another round of episodes of It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
And indeed, they have. Those episodes, there are a bunch of episodes from seasons 5 and 8 that are suddenly inexplicably gone from the service. Everyone was kind of tripping over themselves, trying to figure out, is there something supposedly offensive in them? Just like the reason they removed the other episodes, because of the blackface and all that. And as of today, it looks like it was a mistake. They haven't issued any kind of big statement or anything, but someone who was in the process of trying to figure out what was going on just reached out to Hulu customer service, and they said that it looks like it's a glitch in the system and it should be fixed in the near future. So
they
dodged a bullet this time.
I almost suspect that Blizzard will be doing something similar. They'll be like, no. It was actually,
hey, we didn't mean to do all this.
Wait, what the hell? They changed it? Whoa.
that sucks, man.
Someone, Puerto Rican guy got a hold of the system, sure. You know?
Sure hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Well, I think we did say that our motherfucker of the week, we had kind of also mentioned Jason Aldean.
Aldean. It's Aldean. It's just they call him Aldean. Yeah.
So this dude, I'm not going to talk about it too much. I don't want to promote his song, but like this, nope. It's called like "Try It in a Small Town" or something like that. It's basically a fucking warning shot against like protesters and progressive movements. Yep. And they can gussy it up however you want. When you have a song called this, try it in a small town, you do it in front of a fucking courthouse where a 18-year-old black man was lynched. Come on,
in the 20s.
Man. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah, let me, as someone who worked in country radio, Jason Aldean is a middling talent at best anyway. He was never that good. He just came up in that boom of like dude bro country stars. He was the epitome of beers and trucks and dirt roads and bare feet. I'm pretty sure the guy has a foot fetish. Like, look into it, because he mentions bare feet a lot of the fucking time. But this particular song is very clearly, like, I forget the exact lyric, but he says something to the effect of how he got a gun for his grandpa left a gun to him, and they're gonna round him up one day. And then he tries to go on and say there's nothing racist about those lyrics.
No,
that's an implication
not.
That you're putting on it.
Of course.
Jason Aldean's a piece of shit. That's what it comes down to. And he's trying to ride a lot of goodwill from he was the guy whose concert the Vegas shooter fired into. You remember that from years back?
Yes.
Yeah. So he was the guy who was in on that, and he tried to take that and kind of like make it a lot of goodwill on his part, because, you know, oh man, I'll never let that happen again. And it's like, no, this ain't it, dude. That's like, not the one.
You're encouraging it. I don't understand.
Yes.
Like, I saw, well, I didn't see it, because God knows I wouldn't fucking watch it with someone else's eyes. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot clown pole. But Fox News host, I don't want to call her a journalist because she's not, Judge Jean Pirro,
Jeanine Pirro. That's the one that Cecily Strong played on SNL. Yeah,
I was going to say, the only thing I like about Jeanine Pirro, is Cecily Strong's impersonation of her was better than than her. But she said it's a warning against, like, you know, protesters and looters, and because they're breaking the law now like they did back then, and this is a warning to them. And it's like, whoa, hold the fuck up. So are you telling black people to don't take a knee or you'll get shot?
I mean, it's basically Sundown Towns all over again, and trying to actually popularize that.
No, so, fuck. Tanner's being attacked by a small squid-like creature.
A small child.
It looks
a very small child.
It looks like E.T.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Tanner. How's the baby?
She's great. This is great for the podcast.
Well,
it sure is.
I mean, Jesse and Shelby aren't here, so, it's a wild night anyway. Tanner is with, as we mentioned at the top of the show there, with new child. What's the child's name?
Adeline Faith.
Adeline Faith. And what does she think about Jason Aldean's song, Try It in a Small Town?
Oh, she hates it.
Good. That's a good kid.
All right.
That kid's off to a good start. Yeah. Yeah.
Good to know. So that's on the right side of history.
She loves Hamilton. She hates Jason Aldean.
Who would like Jason Aldean? Well, I can think of at least two ex-girlfriends that like Jason Aldean. And one that definitely doesn't.
I went and seen him in concert.
He came up in that round of, again, Luke Bryan and those. Oh, by the way, Jason Aldean song titled Try That in a Small Town, right? You know where Jason Aldean is from?
Small town?
A small town, probably.
Not even close.
What?
Macon, Georgia, which is like a 400,000 population city. The seat of the county, by the way, the seat of his county. He's never, ever lived in a small town in his entire life. So...
Are you telling me that he's kind of like he's the Larry the Cable Guy of country music?
Yes. Cool. Oh, well, he and about 16 other country dude bros. But yes. Yes, that is correct.
Oh, Johnny I think Cash Luke Bryan finally vindicated
that Luke Bryan actually grew up on like a farm or something, but he still sounds like a dumbass, so fuck him. God, I hate most of country music. I really do.
I like some country music. I do. I really do. I like Taylor Swift stuff.
Me too. Taylor Swift isn't even close to country anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, back then, like I like her. I've gone back. Oh, and like to the her country album. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I think it was pretty good. I like old country. Johnny Cash, George Jones.
Hello. Sure. When I say country music is terrible, I am adamantly
you're talking about
talking
the new
about
age. Dude new bro, age truck nuts.
New age pop country. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about like a Chris Stapleton or a Casey Musgraves or somebody like that, those people are talented.
Not Toby Keith, though.
No, Toby Keith hasn't been new or modern in fucking 10 years.
I don't like him.
15.
I don't like Toby Keith.
No.
Piece of shit.
No, he's a douchebag.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about some good music.
Let's talk about some good music, and we're talking about we're each picking a song from a decade, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, right, Lindsay?
Yes.
Why'd you leave off the
2000s? One from each one.
Because I just did five, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of stopped listening to the radio in 2000s.
Well, this is
see, admittedly, personal preference, I would have done 60s up to the 2000s. The 50s were a little tougher for me, but I managed. I found
the challenge was part of it, so...
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
because you look at my list, I put more than one for each one just in case we had a lot of people and I needed extras. In the 50s, I got a handful, but by the 90s, I had to stop myself. Like, I had to go, okay, you can't so be any more. It can't be any more of these.
All right, Tanner, do you have a list too, or are you just hanging out?
I've got a list.
Let's go! White people like to say let's go a lot. So
it's true. White men specifically. White
obviously, men. I want to do this that we work white our way boys. Up. So round one is 50s, round two is 60s, etc.
Well, yeah. Well, of course. All right. Well, let's go with Tanner, and let's get him started in the 50s.
Okay. So my grandparents got me started on that 1950s country kick, and I've got to go with the country queen herself, who was taken from us far too soon, Patsy Cline. With Walking After Midnight.
I go walking.
Good choice.
After midnight.
I could listen to Patsy Cline any and all day.
My mom would agree with you there.
Yep.
My mom loved Patsy Cline. Pretty ridiculously.
Another celebrity taken far too early in a plane crash.
I'd say the hardest one for me on this one is the 60s. 60s is the hardest one for me. There's three.
The 60s wasn't that bad.
There's three that I want to use, and it's hard for me to pick which one, but I'm going to have to go with one just for a specific reason. Patsy Cline, that is a fantastic choice. My mom is giving you a thumbs up from heaven. Let's go to Hunter. Hunter, what's your 50s?
I almost went with a country star too. I'll mention it at the end of this round if nobody else does, but I'm going to go with one that when I got into college and I was on my music scholarship, my first year, my vocal performance track, I did this as a showcase song. So for the uninitiated, at the end of each semester at Southeast, anyway, it used to be the case in their program, you as a vocal performer had to put on a showcase for the department chairs. And so you worked with your vocal coach for the entirety of the semester, putting together a range of songs, something in a foreign language, something very technically impressive, and then something that is like pop oriented. I did a couple of things that were basically show tunes, like I did Friend Like Me from Aladdin. But I also did Bobby Darin's Mack the Knife. Mm-hmm. And this has stuck with me ever since. It really is the epitome of that classic. Shannon, it's the kind of song you would hear walking around New Vegas in Fallout. Like, it would be blaring from your Pep Boy. It's a very big band, kind of Rat Pack sound. Bobby Darin is not one of those guys. He's not Sinatra or whatever, but he fits right in with them. And the song is about a professional hitman. It's about a killer. Mack the Knife is a guy who will get you when your back's turned, when you don't see it coming. So, but it's played up with this very big band swing, you know, trumpets and saxophones, brass instrumental tune. And it's a good tune. It's super catchy. I did it at karaoke a couple of times back then too. And it's a show off song. It's one of those things that you, when it comes on, if you go to karaoke a lot, you go, oh, this person knows what they're doing. Cause nobody does this by accident. So, yep. Bobby Darin's Mack the Knife is my choice from the 50s. I don't remember exactly what year it came out. I had them all, but I forgot to save that.
Yeah, this one was kind of easy. There's a lot of good songs in the 50s, but the one that I went with is, because I'm a huge Rat Pack fan. You mentioned the Rat Pack a second ago.
Yeah.
Dean Martin, Memories Are Made of This.
Yeah.
I'm a big Dean Martin is my favorite.
I figured you'd do a Dean Martin.
Yeah, he's my favorite of the Rat Pack. He always was. Just an amazing singer. It's not my favorite Dean Martin song, but it's a good one. And looking at a list, because, you know, believe it or not, I don't have 50s music in my head all the time. So I had to look up a list of songs that came out in the 50s. And I went, oh, yeah. Well, it's either this or one of the 50 Elvis songs. But I think I'm going to go with Dino. Lindsay, what do you got?
I am going with Love Potion Number 9 by the Clovers from 1959.
Damn, that was right at the end of the decade, wasn't it? Mm. That's a good one.
I still have that song regularly in my playlist. So.
I mean, I have Dean Martin in my playlist. Are you saying I don't?
No, I know you do. I've heard it on there.
Okay. Just making sure.
For the record, had I stuck with my country intuition, I would have gone with, because we were just talking about him, Johnny Cash's I Walk the Line came out in the 50s as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was real close, man.
Well, that's because
it is super catchy.
That's my problem in the 60s. I wanted to go with a Johnny Cash song. Like I said, there's like five songs I wanted to put for the 60s. I picked one, and I'll tell you why I picked it when it gets to me. But it was difficult not to pick Johnny Cash on that one. But let's go back to Tanner. Tanner, we're talking about the 60s now. Of course, the 60s, well known for lots of things.
Lots of great things, yeah.
Lots of great things. Name three.
So, the moon landing.
Fake.
The presidency of JFK.
Bullshit. Derivative.
And
derivative.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Simon and Garfunkel, Sound of Silence, man.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
More
one.
Made famous by Disturbed many years later.
Oh, God,
Hunter. Oh, I thought you
were don't act like David Draven doesn't actually have a good voice.
Dude, the Disturbed.
I would actually say they probably have a better rendition of it.
Hunter. They do. It's amazing. It was, I think it's, well, the number one video
what you
on
want out of
Conan
them.
O'Brien, yeah. Too, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's
it depends what you want out of them. If you want like a haunting rock ballad, then yes, you want the Disturbed version.
I do.
If you want something that's going to, I mean, the version Tanner's talking about, the Simon and Garfunkel version, for me will always be inextricably tied. I know why. I can explain why. To The Graduate, to Dustin Hoffman, The Graduate, the very end of that film. You guys have seen that, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's such an iconic scene of the two of them realizing they have no idea what they're doing and where they're going. And so that's just good stuff.
What about you, Hunter?
You talk about it, Tanner. Oh, well, I kind of took Tanner's turn for him there.
No, he talked about how great the 60s were. You know, he mentioned the bullshit moon landing and, you know.
A lot of good choices here. I could very easily have gone with a namesake one, but I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to go with one that is, for me, the epitome of an earworm. It's You Really Got Me by the Kinks.
You really got me now.
I think the Kinks don't get enough credit. The 60s was really an era dominated by the Beatles, and it would have been very easy to pick any Beatles song and put it on here. I'm going to keep it real with you. I don't really like the fucking Beatles.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like a lot of their stuff overall, but it's just the Beatles to me are Final Fantasy VII to Shannon. It's too easy. It's just too easy. And so there's no part of me that I can safely and comfortably go, oh, I'll put a Beatles song here. So the Kinks, You Really Got Me, is one of those songs that I've really liked since I was young, since I was, you know, kind of discovering music. My dad was really into them because they were basically 60s punk rock in a lot of ways. That's why. That's my choice.
That's a good pick. My pick, I said I was going to explain why. It's Jackie Wilson. You know which one I'm going with? Higher and higher.
I know exactly. And I know why you're picking it, too.
It's because Ghostbusters 2. That's right.
Of course.
That was a hard one, too, because, again, Ring of Fire came out in the 60s.
Right.
And that would be my first choice, is Johnny Cash, the Ring of Fire. But I can't turn down an opportunity to, you know,
bring up Ghostbusters.
So Jackie Wilson, Higher and Higher.
Once again, inextricably, that song to me is the audio then is visually tied to them spraying slime inside the Statue of Liberty.
And walking that bitch down the streets. Yeah. Or playing
hopping around.
Or playing it for the toaster. And the toaster starts hopping around. Oh, yeah. Like it loves Jackie Wilson. Yeah. Bing, bing,
bing. I love the sounds it makes when it's bouncing around on the counter bing, there. Bing.
The other one, I don't think Lindsay's going to pick this one, so I'm going to mention this one too, because the other one that was really tough to not pick was Etta James, At Last. You talk about a haunting song.
Yeah,
that's one of the most haunting songs I've ever heard in my life.
Tanner might agree with me on this. The only reason I couldn't have put it there is because it's one of those overplayed songs for me, because I DJ'd weddings for a few years.
I don't know how many weddings I've DJ'd where I've had a song or dance.
Hoy.
See, I've always had that song more.
It's a beautiful song, but
sure, yeah, but it's.
I've always had that song more like, kind of attached to civil rights and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a song that can be used on so many different things. It's a beautiful song, but I had to go with Higher and Higher to Jackie Wilson. What about you, Lindsay?
I'm sure you're all expecting me to pick something from the Monkees.
Yeah,
I thought about it.
Yes. Yeah.
But instead, I'm going with California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas.
Man, that's another one that I wanted to pick. That's a good
really
song.
Good song. My mom has, like, all of the Mamas and Papas albums, so, like, I grew up listening to that stuff.
That's the only song I know by them. I love
Have you ever heard... Oh, that can't be right. Surely you know... oh, shit, what was the one I was just thinking of?
There you go.
Oh, my God, I was just thinking of the song by them, and it wasn't that one. Damn it. I won't be able to think of it now. Now it's going to screw me up. Lindsay, have you ever heard the version of California Dreamin' done by Jose Feliciano?
No, I don't think I have.
So he's the guy who, you know, like every time that Christmas music comes on and there's that version of Feliz Navidad that plays, he's that guy. So he does a version of California Dreamin'. It was on the soundtrack for Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's really good. It's another one that's kind of haunting. He slows it way down and it's totally rhythmically different. It's basically just him and a steel guitar. It falls apart at the end. It's that until there's some instrumental, like orchestral stuff. It kind of falls apart at the end for me. He gets a little too cute with it. Like he plays a little too much with it, but those two versions back to back are really interesting because theirs is very kind of like constantly driven on the beat, and his is very up and down, and it's really interesting. I'll send you a link to it so you can check it out. Yeah.
All right. While we do that, let's go back to Tanner for the 70s. Of course, hold on. I'm not done. 70s pick. Go ahead, Tanner.
Jesus Christ. This is a hard one for me because a lot of great options. 70s are probably my favorite era of music. But because of, this is perfect timing, because of this thing here, right beside me and my beautiful wife, I've got to go with Looking Glass Brandy.
It's a good tune.
I don't know that.
Excuse me. Yeah, you do. Shannon, it's the very first song in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Yeah.
I don't remember it.
He doesn't remember it.
Yeah, no, sorry.
When they're driving in the car, it's Peter's dad and his mom. Yeah, they're driving in the car, and it says that they're in Missouri. Like, that's the song that's playing.
I fully believe you, but like, you are not going to jog my memory unless I hear it. It's not going to jog my memory. I promise. I got the memory of a goldfish.
It's a good story song. Very much one of those things that's driven by a narrative of this woman who's in love with this sailor, and he's never going to commit to her because he doesn't do that, basically. So,
right,
Lindsay, I also dropped that version of California Dreamin' in the Discord.
Not to be confused, there's another song about Brandy that is a dog.
Okay,
that is true. Yes, all right, there is another one.
Let's
For the 60s, I almost forgot to mention at the end of that round, I almost went with Jimi Hendrix's cover of All Along the Watchtower by Bob Dylan. And or CCR's Fortunate Son. Fortunate Son's not my favorite song of all time, but you cannot. Every time I hear a fucking helicopter, the first song that pops into my head is.
That's the first thing you hear is that.
It's every war.
Yep. I mean, fuck, it was at the beginning of Predator. I'm pretty Predator was Long Tall Sally by Little Richard. Sorry. Yeah. That's the other one. Yeah. If you can't afford Fortunate Song, you get Long Tall Sally. Right. all right, well, Hunter, what do you got for the 70s?
Okay. Oh man, this feels like such a cop out. This is probably the only cop out on my entire list because this is not my favorite song. Ah, fuck it. I'm gonna go with my favorite song. My favorite song from the 70s is "All Right Now" by Free. To me, that song epitomizes the sound of the 70s. If you grew up at all watching Dazed and Confused or anything that was said in that era, you've heard this song. You like this song. It's catchy. It's got that sort of 70s flippant vibe. Yeah, it was not the one I was going to go with, so I don't have as much to say because I was very much going to pick a different song that I'll mention at the end of the round. But this is legitimately my favorite song from there. I know for a fact when we did that that 70s edition of plays, like the only PZ85 plays that didn't air on the network, this was one of the songs that was in the soundtrack I curated for that because it's just very relaxed and easy. And to be fair, it's a song about two people trying to figure out what their relationship is like, whether or not they're going to put a label on it. But it doesn't sound like that. The lyrics are not the same as the beat, the upbeatness of it. So, yep.
Well, for me, for the 70s, this was a much easier choice. Anybody that knows me relatively well knows that I'm a huge fan of Motown. And in the 70s, we got "Papa Was a Rolling Stone" by The Temptations.
Yes.
I'm a huge, huge Temptations fan. I almost picked My Girl for one of the other decades, but that song just always reminds me of Anna Chomsky. I forget how you say her last name.
Chomsky.
Running into that funeral and talking about, he needs his glasses.
She sounds just like that, too.
That's how she sounded in the film. She was a kid. I'm not going to put the blame on her for that. But yeah, Papa Was a Rolling Stone, but Temptations, I mean, it's just fantastic. Temptations were, to me, they were the definition of Motown and that sound of that time period.
Shannon, was the 70s also, that would have been the Four Tops, right? I Can't Help Myself. That would have come out around that same time, I think.
There's a lot of good, like, kind of Motown songs there. It was a hard pick, but in the 70s. Bee Gees. I mean, my God, you could pick any number of Bee Gees songs, too. That's when disco was at its height. I almost picked a Bee Gees song, but I can't not go with The Temptations. So that's my pick. Locking it in. Lindsay, yours is a Bee Gees song.
No, but it's disco.
Jive Talking.
No, it's September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Because I can't listen to this song with and be in a bad mood. Like, that song just puts me in a good mood.
All right, I'll take that bet.
Yep.
I want you to listen to that song while we just fuck with you nonstop. See how long you last.
I'm really good at blocking stuff out. So.
For the record, I was going to go with, again, the cop-out answer, which would have been Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody, yep.
Yeah.
I also had Jolene by Dolly Parton written down, because that's a really good one of hers.
Ballroom Blitz.
A personal favorite of mine that Shannon probably gets sick of me listening to, You're So Vain by Carly Simon.
Which era was when I rode the desert on a horse with no name?
That would have been about the 70s. That's 70s America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For America.
Also, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors came out then, and you were not allowed to try to make me pick a single song from Rumors. So that's why I didn't try to. That entire album came out in like 78, I think. This is fairly late, I think. But yeah, no, I couldn't have done that.
All right, let's go. I'm so sorry. Let's go back to Tanner for the 80s.
Oh, God. I got a list here. I'm trying to decide which one I want to go with because the 80s is another good one. Oh, God.
Dead air.
Dead air.
Tanner's not used to going first.
Yeah, Channel, when this is over, go back and cut that.
Yeah, I'm gonna trim it down. Don't worry. I'll do that. I'll do a lot of work.
Make her a pick. Make her a pick, Tanner. Tell her point at the list.
Make someone goddamn pick.
Dead air.
What's gonna go with Push It.
Salt and Pepper was in the 80s? No shit. I would have thought that was late in the early 90s.
It was late
80s.
You know what? Never mind. I changed my mind.
Okay, go on.
Walk this way.
Talk this way.
To be fair, are you talking about Aerosmith or are you talking about Aerosmith and Run DMC? Because there are two versions of that song.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. The correct answer is yes. but if I had to pick my favorite, it'd be Run DMC.
I also like the one with Run DMC because it lessens the amount of time you have to hear the guy who...
Steven
like,
Tyler?
Basically paid off parents so he could take their underage daughter with him on tour and then fucked her and bragged about it. You get less of that.
Yeah, it ain't great.
When you got Run DMC on there. Yeah. Aerosmith is one of those bands that it's hard for me to listen to now knowing what a fucking scumbag he was.
Yeah. to take Steven Tyler specifically, though, out of the equation, it was so funny to me when Linkin Park and Jay-Z hooked up and everyone went, oh, nobody's ever done this, and I'm just, like, gesturing wildly at Walk This Way. Like, yes, the fuck they did. Like, this was... Run DMC has said, and I forget specifically if it was one of them or all of them, have said, like, the fact that those guys worked with us at that time was huge. They were the ones who came to us and said, let's do this. Like, let's make it a big hit. Let's make a video for it. And it was huge on MTV. So... Yeah, I mean, that was one of those collaborations that almost shouldn't have happened, and then it did, and it was just wild.
I think people also forget that Coolio and Kenny Rogers did music together in 98, so...
That's because when they first met, they had that little friction, because Kenny Rogers looked at him and said, hey, aren't you the guy from Blink 182? And then he...
and he tased him. He had a cattle prod.
Yeah.
No one...
They were trying to get him to set, but he kept he was had this like fighting ring, and he was like, the gladiators must fight to please me.
Oh, who the fuck was next? I think it's Hunter.
It's me.
Yeah.
This is also one that's hard to pick, but I'm just gonna throw a dart here. I'm a little worried I'm gonna steal this from Lindsay, but legitimately one of my all-time favorite songs in general is A-ha's Take on Me.
It was on my list, but I have others in case someone did it. Because, yeah, no. Well, so, great song, iconic video, like,
yes,
has been parodied to death.
Right. It's so funny that I grew up, I didn't like this song when I was growing up. And I grew up in the era, like, when I should have been right around it. I was actually listening to something, I forget which podcast I was listening to today, but the hosts were talking about how when we were growing up in the 80s, it felt like we didn't really like or appreciate the music of the 80s. Like, it was techno, and it was like, you know, glam metal bands were weird. And now here we are, you know, it didn't take 20, 30 years, but 30, 40 years later, close to it, along the way, we've all been like, no, this is, I can unironically enjoy this. Take on Me, not only is this is another one that has a great original version, and then the acoustic version that they did from, help me out. Unplugged. MTV's Unplugged.
And Weezer's cover is also really good.
And Weezer's cover. All three of them are in the same playlist of mine, and they all come up sporadically. The acoustic version is in Deadpool 2, actually, and it's another one of those moments like, I could have said the same thing Shannon said about Barbie earlier. You know, I didn't think I had to come out of Deadpool 2 crying, but here we are.
I only did because of what they did to Shatterstar, but...
No, they got me. They got me in that one. All right, go away from me. I have a bunch of extras at the end of this round.
All right. Well, my pick for the 80s is Straight Outta Compton. Crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube from the gang called Nope. Not going to continue it. Ninjas with Attitudes. It was a great band.
Did you like that more or less than their song about microwave popcorn called 45 Seconds to Bitch Snack?
So the 90s or the 80s, I was born in the 80s. I didn't listen to a lot of rap. I didn't listen to rap until the 90s, and my rap music really started with like Bone Thugs and Harmony. But looking back, I appreciate NWA quite a bit. I mean, they were one of the first big rap groups and you know, ones that kind of ushered in the era of gangster rap, which, you know,
oh yeah,
I know
they
a lot
of founding fathers of it.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, attribute that to like Trouble and gang violence and stuff like that, but you could also attribute it to, you know, young black youths talking about where they grew up and how they grew up and like really exposing what they went through to a national audience. So I think it is important, and it's important not to overlook the talent and the message that these guys had. Plus, you know, again, I'm a big Bone Thugs fan. Bone Thugs only exists because of Eazy-E. Eazy-E was a member of NWA. It's a good song just in general. It was a good album that they're pioneers. I've not watched the movie. I still need to, because I've heard it's really good.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. So for us, it spawned into a household meme that Sarah did not know that Ice Cube had been a rapper. She only knew him as an actor.
So then
Straight Outta Compton comes up, and she's like, that guy looks just... And I'm like, well, it's his son. It's O'Shea Jackson Jr., you know. And she's like, wait a minute. Ice Cube, the way she phrased it was, Craig was in a rap gang? ? And I was like, well, now he was. And I'm running with that forever, because she only knew him as Craig from Friday. So, yeah. Rap gang is a fun term we throw around the house from time to time.
Good rapper. Adequate actor who started some terrible things and then made a bitch of himself by refusing to take any COVID precautions and lost movie roles because of it. But hey, you can see him in the new Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
His son is a much better actor, which is what really gets me, because they're so similar. But O'Shea Jackson Jr. is so much more talented than him as an actor.
Tanner, did you?
He's a huge comic book and wrestling nerd.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did you like him in? It was Obi-Wan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he was in Obi-Wan. Yeah, which was pretty cool. Yep. Yeah. All right. So NWA I do want to as a special of the other one that was real hard for me to not pick was Michael Jackson's Beat It.
I would have gone with Thriller.
Yeah, but Thriller.
But I was on the it's same. Too, it's too easy. Same boat.
Thriller. It's too easy, man. Too easy. Of course, Thriller.
If we're having to pick like the most iconic songs of that era, it would have been hard not to go with Michael Jackson. It's just this is a spell show bit.
Yeah,
he made Thriller.
He made Thriller. So if it's not Michael Jackson, Lindsay, I'm curious to see who your '80s song is.
It is
Straight Outta Compton.
Don't Forget About Me by Simple Minds.
Oh yeah.
How is it not? Wait, did Hunter pick Take on Me? He did. Now I remember.
Yeah,
I did.
He did that one.
Now it's coming back to me.
I mean, Lindsay, otherwise it would have been Tainted Club. Love by Soft Cells.
Tainted Love.
Also whoa, good. Whoa.
I had those, and I also had Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics, and Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It, because I still enjoy that song too.
Shannon, would it have been too easy for either of us to just pick Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr.?
Yeah, I think there's a reason we left that one off the table.
I feel like it got an honorable mention. Africa, Toto, yes. That was in the 80s, which doesn't feel like it. That feels like a 70s song, but it was in the 80s. And Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Never Gonna Let Michael You Jackson Down. Being iconic for the 80s. Are we forgetting about Purple Rain?
Who was that?
Sadly, like Prince was also a guy who I grew up with but didn't grow up on.
Yes,
yeah, and I've only come to appreciate him now, really.
Same.
And even now, it's like I don't think I have a single Prince song on a playlist. Like if it comes up, I'll listen to him, but I don't like go seeking out any Prince tunes for whatever reason.
I
take that back. Raspberry Beret was the one that really stuck with me, and we played it. We played it on one of the stations when I was still in radio, and it had to have been the river. It was one, if I popped into the room and it was playing, I would stick around until it went off. But
so
that's kind of it.
I have the Batman soundtrack on my playlist because, you know, he did, famously, he did the Tim Burton Batman soundtrack.
Yeah.
And then there's a song that I'm like, wait, I think that's a Prince song. I need to look it up because I remember being in, we were at the pool hall downtown years ago, me and Bob and Chad and a couple other people. And this song came on and I'm like, what is this ridiculous song? And they told me, someone's like, that's Prince. You know what song I'm talking about? There's a song he did called Pussy Control.
Yep.
It is.
And here's
I have a great story about that too. I think I've told you.
I want to hear that, but as a word of advice to everyone out there, do not Google Pussy Control trying to figure out who sang it. Because
bad idea.
Well, you can imagine. Yeah.
That's not even his craziest song though.
Quickly, the story there is that when Matt Sism, and God, I hope he's listening to this, and I were living together, we roomed together for about a year. We did a lot of karaoke. We went to Show Me's often. Actually, he did a lot of karaoke, and he dragged me into it. And our go-to song was Sum 41's All Killer. Or no, it's from our Killer No Filler. What's the song? What's the fucking Sum 41 song everybody knows?
Fat Lip.
Fat Lip. Thank you. That's what it was. But so we go to his cousin's birthday party one time, and it's at Buffalo Wild Wings, and they're having karaoke because they tended to be, you know, around when all that was going on too. They sign him up to sing that Prince song. Matt, at this point in time, there are two important things to know about Massism. And if you've listened to this podcast, go back and find his name somewhere in some of the older Horse Times. Two things to know about Matt in this moment. Number one, he is drunk out of his mind, which takes a lot for Matt. And number two, Matt does not know this song. So he is incapable of following along to the lyrics as he goes up to sing it, which resorts in him just screaming the name of the song for about 3 minutes over and over and over, alternating with like some ahs and then just Pussy Control. Like he's singing it like it's the Sex Pistols. I wish camera phones had been a thing at this point in time because I would have an all-time classic video.
And they all stood up and applauded
in my head. No, they did not, because come to find out afterward, they told him that his grandmother was there, and she heard the whole thing. We need to ask him about that the next time he's on the podcast.
So yeah, that's still not the craziest Prince song. Darling Nikki is probably the craziest Prince song.
Yeah, but the Foo Fighters took that one from it. Foo Fighters version is better.
Frankly. Also, to circle back, something just popped up. To circle back to what we were talking about earlier with age gaps in those movies, I just saw that Dolph Lundgren, who's 65, just got married to his new wife, who's 27.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be in that movie, Shannon, where he smells crime and she's going to be the lab assistant. So then, you know, he goes out, he's fighting crime, come back, full penetration. And this just goes on for about 90 minutes until the movie just sort of ends.
I will say Dolph Lundgren can do whatever he wants because, one, he's a fantastic actor. He really is. He was the first Punisher. Also,
he's a brilliant man. Cis white man. He's a cis white man. He can do whatever he wants.
Well, sure. He also, to beat Tanner to the bad news, I saw this a while back, but I didn't know it was so bad. Apparently, he's been told he has about 2 years to live because his cancer has spread so badly. So, you want to marry a 27-year-old? Man, fucking do it. Like, I fucking support it. I support everything now.
All right.
Jason Aldean, I got your back.
No.
Try it in a small town. See what happens.
Shut it down. No, this was stupid. Shut it down.
Tanner, ow, last pick, 90s. Go.
I don't know if I'm embarrassed to admit it.
Is it Jason Aldean, his underground album?
I am a huge Backstreet Boys fan.
We all are.
Nothing wrong with that.
Don't worry, yeah.
Fair. Yep.
The question is, which one do I want to go with?
AJ.
Shut up. Also, Nick.
Hmm.
No, he ended up being too much of a bad boy.
See, do I want it that way? Or
is that Nick Lachey?
Yeah.
He's the one that was married to Jessica Simpson, right?
No, Nick Lachey was in 98 Degrees.
I thought Hunter was doing a bit for a second. Yeah. I'm going to go with Everybody from Backstreet Boys.
Everybody!
That's
a dance tune. A dance tune.
That song is fine, but that video is badass. You ever see the video where they're like the universal monsters?
Yeah.
It's very, very cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's catchy.
Yeah. Makes Backstreet Boys okay to listen to as a straight white man. And I gotta be straight or else I'm gonna make people sick, I've heard. Let's go to Double H.
Well, you and Steven. All right.
Keep him away from me. Time... There's too much sexual tension.
This is the one time I am going to go with my personal choice, not the, oh, this was key for the era or whatever. It's Everlong by the Foo Fighters.
That's the, I've always said, the last show we ever do, the last show I do, that's the song.
What I did in radio, it was good enough for David Letterman, exactly. It was good enough for us.
That's the exact reason I was going to do it.
And I liked the Foo Fighters before that song, don't get me wrong. You know, I liked a bunch of their other stuff, but it's one of those songs that has just woven its way into huge moments in my life. And so it's inescapable when it comes to a 90s tune. It also really, I think, summarizes that sound, the 90s. I mean, we've been talking about this with movies on Extras and Epilogues. That time frame was such a, you know, the 90s to the 2000s was such a transformative time in pop culture in general. People were trying new things because the economy was good and they could do that. And so Foo Fighters was that thing. Dave Grohl had created this album, had a ton of copies in the trunk of his car. Did I tell you the story about how he was going to join Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers?
No.
Yeah, so the short version of this, it's in his biography, which I read last, or his autobiography, which I read last summer, the storyteller. But Nirvana had fallen apart after Kurt died. He created this album. The first Foo Fighters album is self-titled, and it's mostly just him, except for a couple people laying down guitar tracks. But he would play guitar, record it, then play drums, record that, sing it, record it. Made the album, made a bunch of copies, had them in the trunk of his car, and then Tom Petty asked if he would come in and fill in as his drummer on SNL, because the Heartbreakers were performing on SNL to promote their album. So Dave goes, yeah, sure, I'll come and do it. He sat in with him. It was a great time. He said he really gelled well with the band, to the point that Tom asked him, do you think you'd be interested in doing this full time, like becoming this? And he said, in that moment, I knew I had two directions I could go. I could either be the new drummer for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, or I could go be Dave Grohl. And I knew that if I didn't try the latter, I would always regret it. And so he turned him down and promoted he gave him a copy of the Foo Fighters album, gave it to all his industry friends. Next thing you know, Foo Fighters is a thing, and they create an actual band.
Worst decision ever.
Well, that's how they get those fresh pots.
Yeah, and get fresh pots! Yeah, Everlong, Foo Fighters is my all-time favorite Foo Fighters song. I don't care if you think it's their best one or not, it is.
Foo Fighters
and that's
is
that's a hard team. Choice, too.
But yeah. I was gonna pick that song, but Foo Fighters didn't come to me until the mid 2000s.
Yeah, so that's fair.
It wasn't, you know, I feel like it wasn't.
Well, you're significantly younger than us too. So.
Yeah, you're a little bitch, baby. my last pick. It should come as no surprise to many. Well, fuck. This is the hard one.
I know where this is going.
I
think I know where this is going.
You might. There's so many things to pick from here because the 90s gave me Boys to Men. I mean, the 90s is when I really opened my eyes to music, and I became a fan of so many different genres of music. The games alone at that time period that influenced me. I'm gonna look this up and make sure I'm not lying before I say it. Just in case it didn't come out in the 90s, and I don't want to look like a fucking fool, you know.
Little bitch baby.
Little bitch baby, like Tanner. Yeah, it didn't, so I am a little bitch baby. Much bitchier and babier than Tanner. But
what was it?
Oh, it was the game. I was thinking SSX3 and the music from that, but that was actually early 2000s, so doesn't count. But
the song might still come out at that time.
They I know the one that I liked the most actually came out after that game. It was Autopilot Off. They did one album and it was fantastic. But yeah,
they would have been early 2000s because that's when that pop punk era was like really kicking off.
But the one that I picked for this, despite there being so many good songs in the 90s and so many that I remember, I mean, the song that influenced me the absolute most, and it'll go down as my favorite rap song, is The Crossroads, Bone Thugs and Harmony. I mean, it's a song. It was a song so good, even my mom liked it. I mean, we had it at her funeral. She legitimately loved that song, and you know, I knew Bone. I actually didn't like that song when I first heard it because I was just getting into hip hop and rap, and I was really big into like gangster rap. I was very, you know, counterculture, which I still am. So shock.
Well, it's a rap ballad.
I mean, that's nobody was doing that. No one was doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was different. The first time I heard it, because my friend Adam called me and he played it over the phone, and I was like, I don't like that. That's soft, man. That's soft. I'm hard. I'm hard as fuck, yo. I'm from Caro, motherfucker. But it turns out the song was amazing, and it propelled Bone Thugs and Harmony to success. I think Crossroads actually beat the Beatles for like singles or something. I forget what the rule was, but it was huge when it came out. All of a sudden you see Bone Thugs and Harmony, they're on TV. They even did a guest spot on a little, I don't remember the name of the show. It was on Fox, and it was a cop show about two young cops. Malik Yoba was one of them, and I can't remember the other guy. He was Hispanic. And I can't remember the name of it, but they actually did a live performance on that. They go to a bar, and sure enough, there's Bone Thugs and Harmony doing Crossroads in the background. What a lot of people don't know, or at least don't remember, is that there's actually two versions of the Crossroads. There's the first, so E1999 Eternal was the album.
New York Undercover.
New York Undercover. That's it. What was the other guy's name before I finish this story?
Shit.
I want to say it's Eddie.
Keep going. I'll find it.
But I may be wrong with that. So yeah, they put the song out first.
Yes.
Was Eddie?
Detective Eddie.
Yeah.
Yep. Michael DeLorenzo.
Michael DeLorenzo. There it is. They put the album out first, E1999 Eternal. I always want to say East. That's one of the songs. and they had a version of the Crossroads on there, but it wasn't until Eazy-E died that they re-released the album with the new version of Crossroads, and then it took off. And all of a sudden, Bone Thugs and Harmony was a household name. And, you know, 30 plus years later, they're still making good music. I mean, they're not as big as they used to be, but they're still really good. Now they're talking about doing an album with Dr. Dre. Which, yes, they've never done an album with Dr. Dre. They did a song with Notorious B.I.G., obviously, Notorious Thugs. They did one with Tupac, Thug Love. And they also did one with Master P, but who gives a shit, and, you know, other people. But they've never done one with Dr. Dre, so I'm excited for that. That's my pick, Bone Thugs and Harmony. Lindsay.
Hell yeah.
Well, I thought about Green Day.
Yeah, you did.
I thought about Letters to Cleo.
That's who you should
have
been. I thought about Matchbox 20.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm going with Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
It's a good choice too.
That's a great song. I love that song.
Good. I was obsessed with it when it came out.
Did you ever see that movie though?
No, but I remember it playing on Stars.
That movie has one of the biggest kick you in the dick endings of any movie I've ever seen. Like, it's not quite the Mist bad where you're gonna cry and scream at it, but it will bum you out horribly. What a terrible... a great ending, but a terrible ending.
Oh, yeah.
I also remember Kevin Schenkelberg having to almost get in a fight with people in GameStop over Goo Goo Dolls. So, yeah. You don't fuck with the Goo Goo Dolls, man. That's a good song.
My fucking 90s extras, I realize, is now just an alt-rock playlist because I got Creep by Radiohead is on here. I also had Green Day. I went with Welcome to Paradise because it's my favorite song of theirs.
Mine would have been Basket Case because that was my introduction.
Sure, yeah. Loser by Beck is another great one.
Oh, man.
Smashing Pumpkins, 1979. That song is legitimately like right below Everlong for me. So that was the first one I wrote on here. Nirvana, obviously, could have been an easy one. I also had Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Life. I felt like that could have been a good...
That is a...
It's a very, like, indicative of the 90s type song.
Yeah, that one is a really good one. All my extras for the 90s... This is when I was at the height of my rap phase. And it slowly... So the way my music went, it went country, because that's what my parents listened to, so I had to listen to it.
Sure.
Into rap, into Motown, into Japanese music, because I got big into anime at the time. And I was listening to, like, Gackt, Malice Mizer, Duran Gray, people like that. And then it transitioned into rock. I started listening to, you know, Breaking Benjamin, Coheed, stuff like that. And then at this point, I listen to everything. I listen to everything and anything. Yeah. I love music in general. But my 90s stuff was going to be more, you know, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg,
Nothing Jay-Z. But a G thing came out in the 90s.
Oh my God. It was revolutionary. Yeah. Revolutionary time. 90s were the best era for rap music. Don't at me.
Boy bands for me, I was a handsome fanboy. Give me Mbop all day.
Oh God, Mbop was catchy as hell, man. I mean, you can't take that away from that.
Backstreet Boys. Now that, with the exception, if you got to go rock, Goo Goo Dolls was always one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Iris is one of the best songs out of the 90s.
Absolutely. 90s was great for everything. Music, TV. Hunter, I heard movies were great in the 90s too.
Oh boy, that sounds like a segue since we're wrapping this thing up.
What into what?
So if you haven't heard on Extras and Epilogues, which again we did another great episode last night, something that we're doing right now is running through. I read a book by a guy named I keep saying Brian Rafferty, and that's not right. It's Brian Ratfery, something to that effect. But it's called Best Movie Year Ever, where he posits that 1999 was the best year in film history, and so we've been running through a lot of the movies on that list. Sequentially or otherwise, we're kind of just picking and choosing. We talked about Office Space last night, and that episode is up now with Cody Sandusky over at Podzilla1985.com. Yeah. And next week, as we mentioned earlier, it will be the seminal romantic comedy 10 Things I Hate About You. We're bringing Lindsay on to cover that one with us.
She's actually
one of the things you can expect in the near future.
She's actually hosting.
Okay.
She doesn't realize it.
you all right. Explained to me Done. The format. I mean, I've watched this movie enough times. I have the CD of the soundtrack in the other room.
So. We'll tee it up for you, and then you just take the swing. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Well,
I've seen it enough. I'm gonna watch it again because it's one of Sarah's.
Oh, I'm gonna rewatch it again anyways.
We'll watch it. Next
I
week.
Must have watched that movie like in the 90s and 2000s. I must have watched that movie at least one time. Like
at least once.
So
at least
many once. Because it was on Stars and Encore all the time.
Isn't it? Refresh my memory. It's Taming of the Shrew, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's
a high school version of Taming of the Shrew.
In the same way that Romeo and Juliet by Baz Luhrmann was my favorite version of Romeo and Juliet, you know, with swords and shotguns.
Hey, yeah. Look, man, I'll tell you about it off the show. There's a version of Hamlet that's like...
I mean, if you're doing that comparison, it's like how Clueless is Pride and Prejudice.
Is it really? I didn't realize that.
Yes.
No. Clueless is it Pride and Prejudice? I thought it was a different one.
I'm pretty sure it's Pride and Prejudice. Well, or is it Emma? Maybe Emma.
It's Emma.
I think it's Emma.
Yeah.
It's Emma. It's
Because Pride and Prejudice, you're thinking about Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And that's a good movie, too.
No, because I didn't get to watch that one because you went with somebody else to watch that one.
Yeah, and then you saw what that did.
Tanner's on 1985.com.
Tanner, did you shake your head no at Pride and Prejudice and Zombies? Do you not like it?
I haven't watched it. I have no interest in watching it.
Oh, you would like it. You would like it. It's a period. I love. So I
period piece with zombies.
Yes, I love period pieces that have horror elements. That's why Kingdom on Netflix is one of my absolute favorite shows. I love when they take history and put horror to it.
I wish I could sell you on reading a book, man. That's another thing I need to talk about.
I will never read a fucking book. Go ahead, Tanner.
I've tried so many times.
It was okay.
What?
The book was better. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. It was okay.
I like the movie, though. The movie was still good.
It wasn't bad.
And to tie this to music real quick before we get out of here, I'll never forget. We watched it in theaters, and the ending song came on, and I was like, what is this, like fucking Linkin Park, like every other fucking movie nowadays? And it was absolutely Linkin Park.
Was Linkin Park, yep.
Which was just very fantastic. Much so. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Aaron, hour and 7 minutes.
Hour and seven.
Getting
you can
better.
Do that.
Getting better.
You can do that.
We'll be back.
You can cut it off when we finish the songs and just skip all of
this. Just skip all this nonsense talk. Right. Tomorrow we're back with an all-new Horse Time. We'll have the Kaz Man on there. Ooh. In fact, let's have the Kaz Man on right now, actually. Give me a second. Before we get out of here.
Surprise!
Surprise, motherfucker! It's the Kaz Man.
Does he even know?
I don't think he knows. I don't know if he knows. Does he have his headset on? No.
He has no idea what's happening.
That's a shame.
There's a game happening.
There he is.
There he is.
Game.
We pulled you into the end of the show.
Right. Just y'all, get that
final. You're on the air.
Yeah.
Y'all just keep. Y'all quit playing, man.
Playing games.
Y'all just playing games.
Kaz got pulled in here. He said, quit playing games with my heart.
Kaz, before we get out of here, so the topic of the night was our favorite movie music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. I'm just curious, before we get out of here, what was your favorite song of the 90s?
Oh my God.
And why was it Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison?
Ooh. There you go. That's a good one. I'm going to go with that one. Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison, because it's topical.
Oh,
because y'all are poisonous to me.
Man,
right now.
For the 80s, I should have said On Our Own.
We're venomous.
On Our Own by Bobby Brown.
You could have done a whole Ghostbusters.
Why
thing.
Didn't I pick
you
that?
You could have done all of them.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway.
Why didn't you just do a whole episode on Ghostbusters?
We've done them before. We'll do it again. Tomorrow's an
all-new. I also want to ask a question. Why is it the best music of like five different decades? Why not one?
We did one song from each one for each of us.
Yeah.
So like one round was the 50s, one was the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, we just don't have all the time in the world to let you pick them all out, so.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. We're going to be back tomorrow for an all-new horse time, hopefully with Kaz.
Yes, we are.
But until then, the stables are closed. We're going to go play Diablo. The new season just dropped. I'm already 15 levels into it, and I actually like it quite a bit. We'll discuss it and see how it goes. Until tomorrow, for myself and for Double H, for Lindsay, for Tanner, and for Surprise Kaz, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Cass, take us out.
How do you like me now?
Hey, Jim.